I'd like to call to order the regular meeting. It's Monday, August 6, 2018, Board of Education Office, 5:30. Let's all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Item two, opening items. Roll call.
Mr. Dozen?
Yes.
Mrs. Kramer?
Yes.
Mr. Peterson?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes. Motion to go into executive session at 5:37.
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Peterson with a second?
Roll call.
Mr. Dozen?
Yes.
Mrs. Kramer?
Yes.
Mr. Peterson?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Okay, we will now be in executive session for the consideration of the appointment, employment, discipline, promotion, demotion, or compensation of a public employee or official as per Board Policy 0166, Item A. We need to talk about the thank you very much. So this is actually our work session still.
Sure.
On our work session.
Sorry, I can only carry six.
We're item four, it is seven. Are you ready, Jeff?
I am, you're rolling, you are ready.
Item four, it is 7:10, is the start of our work session. We have A, our attorney discussion. So now, I really didn't have any format other than, I know there was some concerns by a board member about one of our attorneys that we were using. And Ellen, I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you wouldn't mind leading kind of the discussion or any concerns, you know, we don't have to speak about them specifically, but I guess, you don't want to say.
Oh, no, I mean, I can, but we didn't actually sign the engagement letter.
Right, but there were concerns, so that's what this is.
Oh, one of the firms that came and presented to us back at the beginning of June, when David Riley came, the firm Tasta, Tanias and Hollister, has had a couple ethics complaints filed against them since, like, in between the when they presented and, you know, the time before we signed the engagement letter. And based on those ethics complaints, it would be my inclination to not continue, you know, using Taft, because there are some fairly squirrely allegations. There's been, you know, they've been in the news a lot, so I would just rather use another firm that didn't have pending ethics complaints. That's all.
Okay. Do board members have any other comment on that?
Well, if we went a different direction, what would the process be to swap them out?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the board has not signed the letter of engagement. However, I mean, we haven't given them a directive to stop working too, so there's still some things that have gone on. I think we received our first invoice from them. They would be no different than any other law firm that we would contract that would just provide us a monthly bill. In terms of swapping them out, that would be completely up to you if you wanted to go through another vetting process with other firms. Use somebody else that's already on our current board-approved list to look at, to see if they can pick that up. It would be my suggestion that we don't. They are involved in the process. They've worked with David Riley in the past on the project. And I totally appreciate and understand your concern. I guess I am a little concerned moving forward, since they've already started some work for us, if it would slow up the timeline unnecessarily if we had to. I don't know the answer to that question, but it's just something to consider. You know, if we have to backtrack to get somebody else on board, to get them up to speed as to where we are now with agreements that are currently being in process, if we should do that at this point.
So this is in the investigative process for that, for the Taft law. Nothing has actually been substantiated yet?
Well, I.
Based on what you sent to the board, and it's not directly the people, the law, it's not the lawyers that we are using up in the Cleveland branch either. It is the whole law, it's one gentleman or a couple people who are.
It's the whole law firm. They said they would investigate a state representative named Bill Sykes. They said they had no conflict of interest. We can do this investigation. And that particular gentleman had worked at the law firm for over 30 years. That's a blatant conflict of interest. They should have never agreed to do it. They got paid for doing it. They donated to his campaign. And, you know, I read the newspaper a lot. That's pretty, it's the firm not vetting their conflicts appropriately. So it's not one attorney in particular. It's the way the firm vets their conflicts. And that could, you know, that could reflect on us down the road. So my preference would be, because David Riley had said it's not going to, he can do the work for a while. I don't think it's going to set us back time-wise. I don't, you know, I don't want to do that either. But based on what David Riley had written, it doesn't sound like it's going to. So that would be my preference.
I would just say, in my experience, that's a really blatant ethical goof. I mean, really, even if you have a hint of a conflict, you need to get out of it as a reputable law firm.
Yeah.
And the fact that he was a former employee, I mean, that really is
a 30-year.
I know, that's what I'm saying. But even if he'd have just brought him coffee, you still ordinarily are going to go, you know, we paid him. And, you know, I would agree. Ethically, I think that's really a big breach. I'll just say that.
It is very troubling.
So path forward is simple, and it seems like the majority feels uncomfortable using that law firm.
Right.
So
okay.
You have the engagement already with David Riley, and he's just going to pick up where, and we'll complete that relationship with that law firm.
Okay.
Am I right? Is that what I heard?
It's too bad.
All right, so the second thing on our work session agenda is our Drug-Free Clubs of America. Mr. S, hello.
Hi, good evening, members of the Board of Education, Mr. Hall, thank you. So I wanted to just share some information about the Drug-Free Clubs of America. For students to participate in this club, they voluntarily participate in drug testing, at which time, as long as they do not test positive for any illegal drugs, they receive a Drug-Free of America Club card, and then in doing so, they agree to random drug testing for the remainder of the school year. If by chance, either on the initial drug test or any of the future drug tests, if they test positive, Drug-Free Clubs of America will reach directly out to their family, supply them with resources, get them hooked up with any counseling or supports that they might need to get the student help. At no time will the school ever find out whether or not a student tested positive. The Drug-Free Club of America does request that the family sends the card back. And what the card entails, you start relationships with different community organizations, businesses, and if they agree to sponsor participation in the club, then you know they can be on a sheet of paper or handout that offers some type of incentive for card members. So in different areas, they'll offer free donuts at the donut shop, percentage off of perhaps a bill at a restaurant, giveaways at auto dealerships, you name it. So it just depends on the community partners that the school works with the Drug-Free Clubs of America. The other part of this is there is a cost to Drug-Free Clubs of America because they're doing some of the top-end drug testing. There is a $67 fee for each student, but what most communities do is they offset that to about anywhere from $20 to $30. The organization recommends that families have some type of financial investment, so it isn't just the spur of the moment on participating to participate that they are investing. But then you go to local businesses to offset the other part of the cost. And so you would request that businesses sponsor either a set amount or so much per student that participates in the club. Area schools that are participating, Hudson's participating. There was a gentleman there, Hudson graduate, who unfortunately lost his life to an overdose. His father is now a huge advocate in Summit County for bringing prevention programs to Northeast Ohio. So I had the opportunity to learn about this club, meet him, at the Summit County Educational Service Center about 2 years ago. I was introduced to the club. I shared the information about the club with Kappa. Since then, Mrs. Lazar, her colleagues have presented this to Huddle, gotten some student feedback. So far, our students think that this is a nice incentive program to perhaps provide some prevention for our students. The big thing is, it's voluntary. So, I mean, you know, by no means, you know, I think sometimes, you know, quick criticism comes back and says, well, of course, you know, the students that are using drugs, you know, aren't going to participate. So, you know, what are you doing here? And I think, you know, when you look at the drug problem, you know, one of the most expensive parts of the drug problem in our society today is, you know, trying to work with people that are already using. So this just provides students with incentive, but at the same time, you know, an excuse not to use. The examples that they provided in the presentation at the Summit County Educational Service Center talked about students that could, you know, use their parents as an excuse and say, hey, you know, mom and dad are making me sign up to be a member of the drug-free clubs of America, you know, so I you know, I can't do that. So it gives them an easy out. Another, I think, big question when you think about it is, what about the confidentiality? I mean, sure, the school doesn't find out, but if everyone has a card, and one thing that they do within the school is on testing days or on random days throughout the school year, people will go into classrooms and or in the cafeteria. They would say, hey, who has a drug-free of America club card? And then they'll get prizes, whether it's candy, you know, ice cream, a coupon for something in the community. And quick question, well, if this individual doesn't have the card, then immediately, you know, would expose them as someone that perhaps didn't pass. But being around teenagers, we do know that they are leaving things at home or in their car or forgetting things. So it is very easy for, you know, the students to say, hey, I just don't have mine on me this day. And then, you know, it doesn't draw a lot of attention to that individual. So I think, you know, while this is clearly just a kind of a prevention measure, a way for families, for students to, you know, support our students for making good choices. You know, by no means is it a fix-all. I think it's just one more tool that a community can use to try and prevent drug use. I think you also look at this, I think unfairly so, sometimes when you talk to members of the community, you'll hear things about teenagers that just aren't true. You know, working with our students on a day-to-day basis, we have fantastic students that are going to do amazing things in our society. But I think in some circles, you know, there's a negative connotation that comes to mind when you think of a teenager. And some of that's attached to drug use and that sort of thing. So we're, you know, this potentially gives students this card that proves that they are drug-free and that they're making good choices. So in the presentation, they talked about some of the schools that are doing this. The students will add that to their applications when they're trying to get a summer internship or a summer job. So it's just another way for students that are making good choices to be recognized. You know, when I thought of it and started looking into it, I thought of the students that might participate in this, and immediately I thought, these are probably some of our overcommitted students that are already doing, you know, two or three different clubs, participating, you know, perhaps in a band or a music group, and then sports. But then what's nice about this is, once you are part of the club, you're in the club. There'll be a couple officers that will have the opportunity to help plan some of the incentive activities related to the club, but outside of that, there's no commitment. You know, the students don't have to go to regular meetings. They don't have to do any extra work. They just get recognized for making good choices. So that's kind of an overview. You understand that there might be, you know, some questions related to the club, so I'm happy to do my best.
What kind of resources are going to be used by the, you know, districts? What district resources are going to be used?
This is really designed to be a self-funded club. So the idea is that you would reach out to some community sponsors, community businesses to get funds to offset, you know, part of that $67. And then additional funds or additional sponsorships can support some of the incentive activities. So some schools, they'll have an extra dance, they'll bring food trucks for lunchtime, you know, they'll have surprise gifts or giveaways, t-shirts, you name it, and all that is paid for through sponsorship. So there will be a campaign to go out to local businesses and offer them the opportunity to sponsor and be a part of the program. But outside of that, you know, the idea is that this wouldn't cost the school district any money. If it be, and if, you know, obviously down the road, if this became a club where, you know, we had a negotiated advisor, I mean, that would potentially do that. Currently, Kappa was interested in leading this as part of their work.
You mentioned Hudson. How many schools in the area, Northeast Ohio, are currently doing this program?
Well, Hudson added it this past year, and I think they had roughly, I think they had about 400 to 500 students participate. This year, Independence is adding the program. And then I don't have an exact total for this upcoming school year, but right now this is a club that's fairly new to Northeast Ohio.
Did you look into this?
I haven't. I haven't yet.
I heard that
Hudson did.
Yeah.
I've been going for the last couple 3 weeks. I know that Hudson has it. I don't know much about it. You know anything about the school, but. I'm wondering if there's a possibility if we can check out the schools that have it and see, you know, what they've found, you know, pros and cons, whatever.
Well, Kelly and a group of students did visit, they went over to Hudson and they talked with their students. And so far, they feel like it was a very strong start with that many students participating early on. I think that ends up being close to fourth of their school.
Is there... I presume this started someplace. Are there places or school districts that have had this in place for a number of years?
Yeah. There are. I'm sorry. There's a binder, and as you asked that question, it would have been great to have that. I could just turn that page. But I believe it started, I'm going to blank, I think Missouri, if I'm not mistaken. And then it's spread across the country.
Is there... They have a web page or something on the internet or someplace where
yes.
I can. I'd like to get a little bit more better understanding of how it works and what other school districts have found, you know, useful or not.
Absolutely.
Useful.
Did I think Kelly shared? I have a handout.
Mr. Ass, the concern is I don't feel like the. We have enough information for this to be something that rolled out.
What additional information do we need?
Well, I'm with Fred. I'd like to know from a board standpoint, you know, since we are overseers for our, you know, our constituents, not an employee, Mrs. Lazar's not even an employee technically of our district, but I'd like for some of us to have some opportunity to find out more and what and how that goes. I saw a presentation at CDCC with Drug Free America. My concern was, you know, Drug Free America wanted to marry itself with our HVAC program, and so students would be removed from HVAC if they did test positively for drugs. And so, you know, right there, that was something that board was not comfortable with. I talked to Mike Ziegler about this, and I told, and he and I were talking about a policy just to address the concerns that I don't want to see in the future students' rights taken away and having this be something the school is eventually, you know, using as
just,
a
just some background, because I can cut to your chase. A couple years ago, you weren't here. I tried to have us discuss a program by which anybody who participated in any extracurricular was subject to random testing. That didn't get through. The concern that Kathleen had expressed to me is that this would turn into the same thing, because the information could then be used for eligibility, say for sports or whatever. I told her that this does not allow for that because the school doesn't find out about it, but you might want to emphasize that, and I think if the board has a concern of that, I don't think there's any issue with us simply stating as a policy that, you know, we will not ask Drug Free America to ever hand us the information for use other than their cards.
And so, to that point, like to Mr. Peterson's and myself, I'd rather see us have a policy in place before we immediately start it That doesn't mean it can't happen mid-year, but I would feel better, given what I saw at CBCC, that was drug-free America, and that was the intention. I know that in Hudson and some of these other schools, these are places that they wanted drug testing and it didn't work, so I don't want this to be a backdoor way for us to be getting drug testing on our campus and saying, well, it's somebody else. So to put my concern, and I know a lot of our parents' concern that feel similarly to myself, I'd rather, even though a future board can remove that policy, I would like to have a policy in place that ensured the integrity of what Mr. Ziegler, I know, is trying to do, which is good for our students and you are trying to do, but I don't want to see it turn into something else that I know that was attempted, at least in a neighboring district. So, you know, I talked to Mike about that, and if we could have that in place and Mr. Peterson could have, you know, there's no race to this, some time to look into this. I'm speaking for myself. I'd feel better about it rather than starting it immediately.
I'd be willing to, you know, to talk to you or talk to Mrs. Lazar about, you know, any information I can get, either through you or through her or on my own. I certainly will be more than happy to see what I can find out about it, where it's been in existence for, you know, 2-3 years or, you know, some time that I can understand, or that people can give me an understanding of, you know, what works and what doesn't work and that kind of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that, I mean, anytime you hear drug testing, I mean, I think it raises questions, you know, the role of school and all that. So I completely understand. And when I was introduced to this program, you know, when I first heard about it, I had a lot of similar questions.
Sure.
And sitting through their presentation, you know, felt a lot better, you know, about the fact that, you know, they did mention, they were very upfront that there are different schools that take different approaches. So I know some schools have, you know, use this, as you mentioned, with extracurriculars or that sort of thing, or it's led them down that path. But they did emphasize that their view is, and really the goal of the organization, is just to try and help prevent some of it. The founders, I believe, are two former firefighters, and so, you know, working on EMS squads, they saw firsthand some of the results of this, and so, you know, they really. They addressed some of those questions directly with the group, and, you know, ultimately they said, you know, communities will go in the direction that they feel is best for their community. But I think the nice thing about the program, which, you know, once you have more information, you know, hopefully you'll feel
well, show us how this is going to roll out. If you mm-hmm. could show us the plan.
Okay.
And then, you know, I'll work with Mike and Fred, you know, to get a policy. And I want to, you know, I don't know how the rest of the board feels, to get a policy in place that would ensure that the intentions were not that. Because the other thing that ends up happening is what you said, you know, Mrs. Lazar's here now, and it's a club, and the way we operate our clubs is we generally have an employee, and then now the school's involved now, okay? And so that doesn't become as pure as the initial intention. So, you know, I know that there are a large group of our parents who are adamantly against drug testing. There's also the other half, but I heard them years ago, and they would not be happy if we did not do something to ensure that our students' rights, the side that I heard, were not protected. Is this urine? Is this hair? What are you doing it during the school day? Are they being pulled out of classes? I'd like to see all these things, and now that you tell me right next door, we're going to see somebody who's jumping right in, then we'll have a model. This is not a stalling tactic as much as I need to see a better plan, and I don't really feel like it's all these questions are answered yet.
Okay.
Anybody else?
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah, I was just curious if there is any component that tries to track metrics and show effectiveness. Is there any piece of that to try to show, you know, if it's happening?
What's the impact?
Yeah.
And they did address that. They are, as an organization, they're starting to keep those statistics. But I think one of the things that they're running into is, because it's a voluntary program, it's difficult to quantify how much, you know, difference you're making when you don't have, you know, a control group and it's voluntary. But yeah, they did answer that, but it is a difficult thing at this point, because a lot of the, you know, people there, myself included, you know, wanted to know, you know show me the data.
Which I just wanted to say thank you for being proactive about this, because everything that's been in the news lately about drug abuse has been so stark and so concerning that, you know, I think we should be moving in the direction of something like this, and the fact that it's voluntary really kind of alleviates my concerns, so just for what that's worth, but thank you for being proactive.
And just, you know, and the question does come down to, and you think about it, and I've just seen it in 8 years, what's the role of the school? And so, and the one thing is our students have rights, and they have, and the thing is we need to make sure that we, I understand their families can take that, and that's off campus, and they can get stuff, but we need to make sure that their rights, as us as a public entity, we're not violating them. So that's what I'm really...
They would totally volunteer for anything and would know the conditions ahead of time. So we're really not looking to do that. And as long as we know that it's not going to be, information is going to be used, that won't be an issue. So I'm not saying we need to decide anything tonight. I'm just saying, in addressing your concerns.
Sure.
Just, you know.
Thanks, Mr.
Rice.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 5, presentation A. TDA, Mr. Smith.
Hi there. I'd like to talk to you today about 3 items, I think. And the first is to introduce you to Ryan Schmidt. He's our project manager for this project. And I know Mr. Dosa and Mr. Ziegler both met him during the interviews, but I don't think he's had a chance to meet the full board. So he's currently finishing up the aquatics project for the city of Brecksville. He's the project manager for the field house. The city of Brecksville, which happens to be where we're co-locating our elementary school. So he's the right guy for the project, so I just...
Yeah, thanks for having us here tonight. Excited to work on the project, obviously. Education, I've been doing education for as long as I've been doing architecture, which is going on over 2 decades now, so it's exciting. This is a really neat opportunity. It's really making a big impact in the, you know, Brecksville property rights as well, so very excited. Also, just the idea of, you know, kind of creating a new experience for students and the community that, you know, they've been in some buildings that have been there for a long time. It's really nice to see transformation and growth.
Thanks. So the second item is to maybe discuss with you, and I know this came up in one of our core meetings. So our core meetings are, both Joelle and Chris are in our core meetings, and they're really our conduit to the board. So a discussion around in other school districts around, you know, how often do the architects present to the board, how often do are there updates given to the board and that kind of stuff. So with our project, you know that there's several milestones that we go through. There's a schematic design phase, there's a design development phase, and there's actually kind of 1.5 more phases. There's the GMP phase, and then there's the conformed document stage. So what schematic design is, that's going to be the very first look at the plan, the site plan, the elevation, kind of what that looks like. After that phase, there will also be an estimate reconciliation between both the construction manager at risk and ourselves. So at that time, we'll be telling you that we are on budget and that we're on schedule. So that's going to be our goal. So we're going to show you a design that both we agrees within the budget and then also the construction manager. Design development is the next phase. Design development is where we first apply engineering to that concept. So it's getting very detailed into the systems that make that up. At the end of that phase, there's another estimate reconciliation by both parties, a schedule reconciliation, and a presentation to the board at that moment as well. So the first one is after schematic design, the second one is after design development. The last one is at the GMP phase. And that's a little bit more of a contractual approval by the board. So what you'll be approving is the guaranteed maximum price is GMP. It's actually a GMP amendment. So we go through hiring the construction manager at risk. The very first contract that they'll sign up for is called the guarantee maximum price. Every contract after that is an amendment, and it works backwards for the attorneys in the room. So very rarely will you see a contract that's for a very small amount, and then the amendment is this really big amount. And that's the way construction manager at risk contracts work. So it may intuitively seem a little backwards, but it's not. That's the way it works. After which time, there's a conformed document stage, which basically takes all of the building permit comments, the adjudication letters, integrated into the drawings, the project's bid, and after that, it's the award. And actually, the bid event is a private event. It's a construction manager at risk. It's not a public bid. You will see all the numbers, but you're not bound by awarding to the lowest bidder. And you'll be able to pre-qualify all the subcontractors on that project before they even go to bid. So you're ensuring quality in construction as Board of Education. I think that's a lot better than being succumbed to the lowest bidder all the time. So I think that's a very good thing. But what I wanted to express there is that there are three or four different time frames within the next year, year and a half, that we'll be presenting in front of the Board of Education, both showing you design updates and visuals, and then also with an agreement between us and the construction manager as to how much this is going to cost. So with that, I thought I'd update you on kind of the process. So we're on the streets right now for the construction manager at risk request for qualifications. We hope that our goal is the September 24th board meeting to actually make a recommendation to hire the construction manager at risk. So we'll go through that process all the way through it. So the end of September, we're hoping to have him on board. Any questions about that kind of process?
How many people are you talking to about that?
We don't know yet. So right now it's being advertised. When we get those qualifications in, we'll know how many responded.
How many responded?
And the goal is going to be a short list of probably three or four. David Riley is your legal counsel. He's advising us he's kind of managing the process. But then the short list will be vetted. And then we'll actually request a request for proposal from those shortlisted firms. And they're going to submit pricing. So you'll get a construction manager at risk fee, you'll get a proposed construction manager at risk contingency amount, and then you also get a good idea of what the general conditions are. So there will be interviews, but that's after we kind of equalize those prices. So someone may include dumpsters in their pricing, and another firm may say, well, we're not going to include those, we're going to push that into the subcontracts. So what we try to do is to equalize those. So you're looking at apples to apples. So you're really looking at best value. You'll have a scorecard, and you'll be able to score them probably 60% on quality, 40% on value. So price does weigh into it, but it's not the determinant factor.
So when you say that you would make, you know, your firm would make a recommendation, what does that mean? I mean, if we're gonna, yeah. I mean, what? How is the board involved? You shortlisted first, and then we take it from there and drive down, you know, into a heavier vetting and come out with what we wanted? Or are you coming to us with a firm saying, okay, here's what who we recommend?
Yeah, so I think, and this is probably better explained by Riley, but what we would do is we would sit and we would weigh in, but we are not a decision maker. So as a matter of fact, when you hold the CMR interviews, we will give our opinions, and then you'll excuse us from the room. And then you'll vet and then make your decisions yourselves. So it's simply just our recommendation is just that.
So the process will include some board members, kind of like what we did when we hired TDA, where we had the rubric and two of our board members represented were on that committee, and we did that interview process. It'll work very similar. So all five of you will not vet this process, but two of you would be on that committee that would be vetting and interviewing those three to four possibilities.
I think that there'll be some participation from the city as well. Mm-hmm. Because they get a project.
Yes.
They could agree to use the same construction manager at risk. It just makes sense.
Yeah.
So if you want to present this for approval at the September 24th board meeting, presumably, I mean, that's not that far away. So I guess I was just curious when you thought you'd have the,
so we'll
put
go,
the other dates in between.
Sure. I'll give you some dates right here. So, we are looking, so we advertised on August 1st, first construction manager at risk. By, so 30 days, that's out. We will shortlist and issue the request for proposals shortly after that. So on this, it's got September 1st, that may be plus or minus a day or two. They will then, on September 7th, we have scheduled for them to come and ask questions of us in the district. So it's a lot of times, they're asking questions like, well, do you see a loop road around this? And we haven't laid pen to paper yet, so we can't show them that much, but we can clear up a lot. We can tell you, we can tell them that, yes, the building's in air condition. Yes, there's a lot of things that we can answer in logistics, and there's a lot we can't. But we're going to try to make sure that all firms have the same amount of information so they can set a price. After that, their proposals are due September 13th. And then right now, tentatively, the CMR interviews are scheduled for September 14th. That should give enough time between before the September 24th board meeting to be able to, for you to make a decision.
So is there a group then, much like we had before, that needs to be assembled? And is it just, who else would be on there other than a couple of board members?
So we were going to have, just because it's a joint project and it's going to be the same CMR, so we would have people from the city also, yes, serve on that committee to do that interview process. We have a tentative date in between there to look at this initial, once the 30 days are up for the RFQ. We're waiting back to hear from Mayor Ruby if August 30th would work. It's that Friday before Labor Day to sit down with those, with the RFQs that we received to do that shortlist process. So that date's in there as well. We're just waiting for finalization if he's available on that day to do that.
So would that process, the two board members plus Rexville's representatives and whoever else that's in there, are they coming down to one firm to recommend back to the city council and the board, so to speak, or will it come to a handful that then brought back to the board for discussion and selection?
Typically, it works where there will be a recommendation for a firm as for award. Okay. And I think that because Riley is facilitating that, he will also be the only one that sees the scorecards. And when he tallies the scorecards, he'll be able to come back and say, this is how they score.
Okay.
Through your scorekeepers. And that way, you would be able to have some data to kind of base your decision on.
Just for the record, we were out to advertise on the 26th of July. We got out a week early so that we could get those, receive them on the 28th so that we could facilitate the 30th meeting or the 31st meeting. So
good.
We were initially August 1st when we got out earlier to try to push it up.
So that's kind of an update on the process. Now things get a little complicated. But in a good way. Obviously, we talked about the benefits of being able to co-locate on the Blossom Hill site. Just the economy of scale of construction. Basically, the city's giving you a building, a very buildable site when they're done. So they're going to absorb the cost of all the site studies and wetlands mitigation and everything that needs to happen on that site. The consolidation to that is the schedule. So I'm going to go through. The city hired Chagrin Valley Engineers as a wetlands consultant to them almost a year ago now. So they started this process about a year ago, and actually the date was December of 2016. So December 2016, they knew they were going to develop that site. They hired the wetlands consultant ahead. And the way this happens is there are two permits that you need for the site. One is from the Ohio EPA. It's called a water quality certification. The second is from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and that's called an individual permit. So those processes, while they run together, they're not really dependent on each other, so they don't work. It's not like those two groups are working together for this. It's a separate kind of timeline, and they both have their requirements and their approvals. I can go through each of these, but we had them put together. What is the process? For each one of those two parties, what is the process? How does this line up? Where does this put us in construction? So as we see it, the water quality certification, we're expecting that that issue January to February of 2020 is as soon as they'll be able to do that. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is a little even worse than that. It's March to April of 2020. And that's because of the process they have to go through to do this. So there's public hearings involved, there's the mitigation plan approvals, there's 15-day application timeframes. The Ohio EPA will need a public notice, publish in your local paper. There's a 30-day wait period after that where they wait for public comments, then they respond to those public comments. So all of that stuff kind of has to happen and it has to line up. So there's a benefit, a huge benefit to building with the city on that property, but there's also a consolidation or concession is the time, is the schedule.
So construction couldn't start for at least a year and a half?
Correct. Correct. And, you know, you may ask, well, what if we didn't do that? What would our normal schedule be, right? If we didn't have to wait on the wetlands, when would we be out for building? And it would really be probably issuing a notice to proceed of August 2019, probably starting construction September of 2019. So you're probably talking about a six-month delay. So what we would do is we would push forward. It would give us, we'll take a little bit more time in design is what it'll be. We don't need that time, but we can use that time to engage the community and the students. And
the added benefit, too, is that you have more time with the CMR, measuring the cost and things of that nature as well. So that just helps with that process as well to make sure that when you're ready to hit the ground, you're ready to hit the ground running.
But inflation's going to be another year into it.
Does David Riley have any creative ideas to speed this up?
I wish, because we'd also be doing that in Royalton. No, unfortunately. It's one of those processes that are kind of succumbed to. I mean, there's North Royalton is in the exact same boat as you, but they even started a year early. So they're exactly the same.
Are those dates you shared with us fairly solid, or what's the possibility that it gets pushed out even further, right? Somebody finds something that then adds more delay. What's been your experience in the past, and how solid are those dates?
Yeah, it's a great question. So these are best estimates, but there is a dead drop dead date. So when we have, we're looking at submitting early. So what we'd like to do is once we finish schematic design, which is scheduled for end of October, we'd like to take that plan and use that as the application to get started. So we don't wait for, we'll guess conservatively, we'll say we're taking up just a little bit more space than we are just to be safe. Submit it right then. Both parties have 360 days to rule. So, but the bad news is if they can't, so what happens is they have 360 days to issue their permits. If they don't do that, you don't automatically get your permit, you start over. In our experience, that's never happened.
Okay.
So, but I have to make you aware of the risks. It's hard.
And this is something too, Larry Ludwig with Chagrin Valley Engineering, he's super qualified. He's had many discussions with both groups already. He has a very positive feeling for how the process is going. They've already given him indications of site disturbance that they feel comfortable with and things of that nature. So all the signs are pointing positive. It's got a good trajectory based on what he's been told. And Larry wouldn't beat around the bush if it was something that that was okay.
So if it doesn't get started until after those certifications come in, like when would it be done?
Yeah, so fall 2021. And the tough thing about this too is it's site, right? It's the stuff that you can start early. And that's the hard part with this. But there is no getting around it. There's no anything. I would suggest that, because you do have a risk, right? And the risk is, what if they say no? Well, we haven't seen that happen. There is a possibility they could come back and say no. Just to be prepared, I think that we should be looking at alternative sites just to protect the district. And where else you're doing the elementary school. So I just think it's prudent.
So March 2020 would be the likely start of construction?
Yeah, it says March-April 2020. We have got, we're also in the Indiana bat habitat, so we have to fell trees before April 15th.
Yeah, I just got it. Right.
So, nothing like lining everything up right.
So if it starts in March, April 2020, the building can be constructed and online in a little under a year and a half?
Yeah. Yep.
Anything else for Mr. Smith? Thank you very much. Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Good to see you.
So I need to ask, are there any amendments to the agenda?
Yes, we have, I'd like to add, it could be under superintendent's consent agenda, the memorandum of understanding that was previously approved on July 18th with the city of Brecksville that outlines just the shared service agreements for this building project. There were a couple changes, nothing in content, more just some typo things that I feel that we should reapprove at this meeting.
So let's make that item F.
Item K.
What?
Flip the page.
Flip the page.
Ooh, sorry. Item K. MOU. And then I have an amendment as well. I'd like to change item 13 to be a superintendent's contract. And it's going to be exhibit A, which I've submitted to our treasurer. And then
would you put that in other board business or no?
Oh, I think it should be separated.
Okay.
You know, so the vote can be separated. That was my thought. Okay.
No, fine. Okay.
Okay. And then that'll be exhibit A, and then we'll have 14 be adjournment.
Okay, got it.
Okay, may I have a motion to accept those amendments?
So moved.
Second. We froze out those.
Roll call.
Mr. Dozen?
Yes.
Mrs. Kramer?
Yes.
Mr. Peterson?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes. Changes be noted. Item 6, community communication, hearing of the public. Does anyone wish to be heard? Sorry, we must be. No? All right, I won't read it then. Item 5, board member committee reports. A, financial liaison audit committee. Hearing none. B, permanent improvement committee. No. Okay, item C, board policy committee.
We're due for an update from our NEOLA gentleman here shortly. We usually get one in August and February, so there'll be an update coming. We haven't received it yet.
Yeah, one of the primary things in that update will be the new procurement policy set forth by the state that I forwarded some information about to the board here in the last couple weeks. So look for that to be at the forefront of some policy changes. Okay. Led by NEOLA.
And Fred and I, well, I expressed interest for having a policy looked into for the drug free America.
Yep.
So we can work on that.
Duly noted.
Okay. Item 6, district committee reports. A, there's no way. Transportation appeals committee, not before the bus list comes out.
Get ready.
Get ready. Item C, CVCC reports. Mr. Gilbride cannot be here, but all board members received a 5-year strategic vision from Mr. Gilbride that was worked on. They had hired somebody that I asked Joelle to look into. It was impressive, that strategic vision, and so I don't know if you had an opportunity to look into that yet.
So Dave Mengus just sent me the contact this morning, so I have it printed out to look into it, but I was curious to see if you liked this format of how they put this plan together in terms of keeping track of it, if it was something that you would even, you know, want us to pursue based on the work that they had here.
I didn't spend a great deal of time.
Don't need the answer now.
No, but that's something that, you know, that was something we're expiring, our 5-year strategic vision. So this was something that Joelle pursued, which is great because we were, you know, I had seen another firm. And
sure.
So this could be something that we begin working on maybe at OSBA, possibly, you know, just the start of that, or we'll have to see what our timeline is, but sooner than later, I'm sure, is better.
The thought was if we could get I was going to bring in a couple of people to help facilitate this process, so if we were going to vet that and then invite them to OSBA. We wanted to kind of get, so I, Dave Menga sent me this name. We've got a couple other recommendations, so I was just going to bring them in and talk through their process, see if we can get some work samples to share with you, and then the goal would be if the timeline lined up to bring them down to OSBA to start that process with us as a board.
Does that sound like a plan for everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Sure.
Okay. Pushing us forward. C, safety and security meeting report.
Chris?
Well, we haven't had any meetings. Obviously, our infrastructure updates continue pretty significant. Infrastructure updates going on this summer, and we are under contract now with the Ohio Schools Council to do a security assessment. So, it's our goal to have something available and actually present at the August meeting the findings from the Ohio Schools Council. And we'll subsequently present that at our next security meeting.
Okay. September.
Great.
Okay, thank you. Item D, School Foundations Report.
You have a meeting next week?
No, they met for the scholarships, and
oh, yeah.
Is that right, Mr. Martin?
Yeah, we have Tracy Townsend applied the rubric on the grant proposals, and did a really good job. We'll be announcing that.
Okay, that's exciting. That's always an exciting time. And then there's an election that's going to be, Mr. Martin, they're changing the election a little bit. They're voting on their slate for foundations.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, and the other thing was that people who are school officials are not going to have a vote. They're going to be represented on that committee, but if you're an official like Mr. Martin, myself, or Mrs. Magyar, you will not be voting. So you'll just be in an advisory capacity. That's the other change we're making. EPSO report?
Nothing to report.
Okay. F, legislative report? I do not have one. G, other board member reports, anything else?
Was there a meeting today in Independence? Did somebody attend?
A meeting in Independence?
I attended.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, they announced that you attended at the
yeah.
So,
who announced it where?
They said a board member and a mayor. So what did you attend? Let us know.
We all got invited.
Yeah, we all got invited.
I wasn't sure who.
I thought it was a very good presentation. I don't remember the gentleman's name. His first name was John.
Jeepers.
Anyway, he just talked about the effects of drugs and alcohol on the brains of the most elastic period of time your brain is when you're 12 to 21 years old. So if you do drugs, marijuana specifically, but other drugs or alcohol, it affects the performance of your brain. Much less so after age 21 because your brain's fully developed. And one of the ideas that came up from his presentation was to develop posters that they could show the difference. And this is an actual brain study that they did in California between a perfectly normal brain and a brain that had been on drugs for a while. And the difference, it'll be with me for a very, very long time. So the idea of posters, he's willing to work with a couple in the audience that were interested in developing so that kids could see the difference. Kids, parents, anybody could see the difference. He spent 3 hours, and I have a lot of notes on my note. but that's, to me, was the high point of his 3-hour presentation. Just the effects of, and he focused a lot on athletes and high school children leaders, those that had the opportunity to make a difference to others and to encourage others to walk away from drugs for that same reason. The actual change in the brain and I said, it's very powerful to me. I don't sit down for 3 hours for everybody, and Mayor Alai was there for all 3 hours as well. And he acknowledged the mayor for having such a busy schedule and willing to take 3 hours of his time. So I really thought it was a fantastic presentation. He's hired by major sports teams, football teams, NBA basketball teams, different organizations all around the country, bring his thoughts and ideas and evidence of the effects of drugs.
Well, thank you.
On children.
Thank you for attending that on behalf of the board. And sharing that.
Having attended it, I'd go hear him again.
Item 7, other board business. We have a David Riley engagement letter, which is
tab 1.
Mm-hmm. Okay. B, amended Fazina. Is that
that's correct? Letter?
Tab mm-hmm. 2, may I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any comments or discussion? Okay, roll call.
Mr. Dozen?
Yes.
Mrs. Kramer?
Yes.
Mr. Peterson?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes. Item 8, superintendent announcements.
Just excited that school starts in 2 weeks from today. Can't believe it's coming up so quickly.
Oh, yay!
I know.
No, right?
Yeah, so lots of information has been going out to parents, just getting ready for school, so we're very excited. I want to just do a huge shout out to our maintenance and grounds people. They have done, and our custodial staffs, who've done a fabulous job getting our buildings ready. The grounds look beautiful, the buildings are gorgeous. If you haven't seen the facelift we did to the gymnasium up at the high school, it looks absolutely amazing. You need to go up and see it. We did a whole new wall wrap, had it all repainted, got all new banners for the state championships. It looks incredible. So if you haven't seen it, I suggest that you do. And just a reminder, that's something, two things that are coming up really quickly. We have Meet the Architects, so the two gentlemen that you saw sitting here are having an evening that is open to the community for people to come and ask them questions about the project. They will have some samples of you know, pictures of other buildings that they have designed, and so people will be able to interact with them on August 22nd, 6 p.m. at the Media Center. And then our first design phase, as he was talking about, will happen on September 18th at the Brecksville Community Center. There's going to be about 100 people involved in that process. It will be an all-day meeting from 9 to 3 that will also include children, staff, community members, even preschool parents of, you know, kids who will be in the elementary school that maybe have not attended it yet. So looking forward to that. And here's wishing everyone a smooth and safe opening of school here in a couple weeks.
I will say the marching band is even louder this year than they've been in the past.
And so is our director. We could hear him on that thing all the way up here. I'm like, holy guys, they're going to lunch now. And so they're
downtown my house.
Yeah, so my dogs went out all the time because they enjoy listening to the drum. Pounding going.
Yeah, very good.
Okay, item 9, superintendent's consent agenda. We have A, certified recommendations, tab 3, B, classified recommendations, as seen in tab 4, C, supplemental recommendations, tab 5, D, assistant transportation supervisor job description, tab 6, and E, administrative supervisor salary schedule, tab 7. I have a motion.
So moved. Second.
Okay.
Any questions on any of the certified, classified, or supplemental recommendations? I'm happy to answer for you. Item D and E, we created an assistant transportation supervisor position, so the job description just needs formal board approval. And because we created that position, the administrative salary schedule that you just approved has to be reapproved now to include that position. So just a couple housekeeping items.
Okay.
What's likelihood that we're going to fill that role before school starts? I know she moved into the one role, but then there was another role.
It will be filled before school starts. Okay. We had it posted right away. She's already got a list, and she has been calling them as we've gotten in applications just to kind of screen to see. So she's on top of it.
Great. Wonderful.
That's a surprise.
Okay. Roll call.
Mr. Dozen?
Yes.
Mrs. Kramer?
Yes.
Mr. Peterson?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes. Item 10, Superintendent's Other Business. We have A, Payment in Lieu of Transportation, Tab 8, B, 2018-2019 BBH Preschool Grade through Grade 8 Fees, Tab 9, C, 2018-2019 BBH High School Fee Addendum, Tab 10, D, 2018-2019 Art Textbook Adoption, Tab 11, E, 2018-2019 PEP Consultation Support Agreement, Tab 12, F, 2018-2019 PEP Contract Therapeutic Support, Tab 13, G, 2018-2019 Cleveland Clinic Autism School Agreement, Tab 14, H, 2018-2019 America's Best Transportation Contract. Oh, we're happy we have them. Tab 15, I, Anthony Rizzo, Tuition, Grade 10, Class of 2021, Tab 16, and J, 2018-2019 Preschool Family Handbook, Tab 17. And you can see the asterisks.
And K, that we just...
And K, our MOU.
I had sent the board just some additional details about all of these tabs items. Are there any questions that I may answer for you?
Hold on, let me have a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I had sent you some additional information on each of these tab items earlier in the week. Are there any questions that you have for me at this time?
Not for me.
No. Okay.
No.
Roll call.
Mr. Dozen?
Yes.
Mrs. Kramer?
Yes.
Mr. Peterson?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes. Item 11, Treasurer Consent Agenda. We have A, we have advances. We have the first, second, third, and fourth one. We need to read them. B, Establishment of Student Activity Account, Class of 2022. We have item 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. We have C, Increased Middle School Athletic Startup Money from $200 to $250. We have D, Healthcare Billing Services of Ohio Medicaid School Contract Type 18. E, Comp Management, LLC, BWC, Group Retro Participation, Recertification, Tab 19. F, Athletic Tournament Worker Fees, Tab 20. G, Amended Bond Resolution, Tab 21. H, Financial Report, June 2018, Tab 22. And I, Minutes of the June 25th, 2018, and July 8th, we did, and July 18th, 2018 meetings. Did we have a meeting July 18th?
We did.
Yeah.
Yes, you did.
Okay, I missed
we
it.
We did, absolutely. You didn't miss it.
I missed it.
I think
you
were here. Sorry, I was like, wait a minute. Oh, you missed it. See, Fred? Let's stick
on. I have
Tab 23.
For you.
May I have a motion? They're
so
all blending.
Second.
Okay.
All right. I know that you probably want to talk most about C. That we probably won't. That's a little humor on a warm, toasty summer day. But the advance portion is really just maybe a little different than years past. But these are transfers that were made to avoid some negative account balances at fiscal year end. This is June's report, so this is the last month of fiscal year 18. Those monies we basically out of the general fund get recouped when we actually receive funds, because CAPA, which is two of the ones that really apply, we actually haven't received $1 yet from the Ohio Department of Health for the 499 fund. But these are just their budgets, their 18 budgets continue through the end of September. So nothing unusual, but a little unusual, I think, this year, only because trying to avoid negative account balances. For the last one, number four, Title 4A, actually, we've already been reimbursed by the state. That was just a little for, it was really for a few weeks. But nonetheless, it was all about timing. And so that's that. That was, again, just a little different. That looked different on the financial reports, but I thought it was worth discussing. It's all... I was staying mighty focused on the fiscal year 18 audit that will take place over the next six to eight months. The letter D, again, I don't know if you have any questions about D and E, but those are just a couple of reimbursement programs that have really been really beneficial to our school district. It's really just ending back up with HBS, which is Healthcare Billing Services, who really is paid on a contingency. They get 7%, which is relatively low, to help collect on any Medicaid reimbursement that the district is entitled to. So longstanding relationship with those folks, and we're just really, the contract could be canceled at any point. Yes, Ellen?
Did you notice that Ohio Bureau of Workers' Comp, it has the employer name as the schools, but it has an address in Lakewood?
Yeah, that's basically the address of the comp management, who basically are actually KKS&G, if I recall. I have to look at Chris, because Chris and I work conjunctively on working with KKS&G, who happens to be the consultant through all these conglomerations. Basically, I know that there's a lot of words on that contract, but that was my first question, is why is Lakewood, that's not our address.
Okay.
That is their address, and so that's the reason for that.
Okay, just checking.
Oh yeah, no, that was the first thing I had. I was like, hey, wait a minute, we are in Lakewood. That must be a typo. It is not. Athletic tournament worker fees, basically just a PO after the fact. In working more closely this year, in my first, I'll call it first full year, because sometimes the school year really starts in, you know, June, July to prep for August. And so one of the things I'm working with Mr. Maslona about is not having any POs after the fact. Anything over $3,000 is beyond my approval authority, and this really stems from the wrestling tournament, actually 6 months after the fact, that the PO didn't arrive. So just working more closely with him to make sure that doesn't happen anymore, but thought it had to be something I had to bring to the board's attention, because of the dollar amount. Anything below $3,000 typically I can handle myself, but it's something that was worth talking about. But want you to be rest assured that we actually was up talking to the fall coaches here this morning, or the Joelle and I both up addressing the fall coaches to make sure that the items like this are really shored up and kept close to the vest. Amended bond resolution, really just as I might have explained to you earlier, but again, worth just mentioning, those are just about dates. BNY Mellon, who is our transfer agent for selling the bonds, wanted to make sure that the interest pay date is 15 days before the month that the interest is due, instead of the first day of the month the interest is due. There was really just one change in, I believe, paragraph 3D of the bond resolution that you approved in July. So has no bearing on us selling bonds, but it was something that was worth amending. And then for the financial report, which I do have on the screen, this being the first full fiscal year that I've been involved with here in the district, page one really is the month end, which I thought was worth mentioning. A couple of items in the revenue section, $176,000 annual variance or positive variance for all of revenue was really driven by a couple of things. One being a catastrophic cost reimbursement, higher than expected, and also higher than expected, actually on page two, which I'll get to here. Higher than expected special education tuition and interest income. So it's always good to talk about fiscal year end. This page two of this report really gives a nice snapshot of what happened versus the forecast and some of our actual revenue and expenditures. So on the expenditure side, actually, I want to draw your attention back to line 2.06, which is the Bureau of Workman's Comp retro, which we just really talked about a minute ago with KKS&G. I think you'll find in the August report, we actually received another chunk of funds from the Bureau of Workman's Comp, BWC, retro reimbursement. We got $63,000 in June, the last month of the fiscal. And I think we got $194,000, I recall, in July, which again, that'll be for the August report. So that program has been, you can't really talk about the longevity. That's why I really don't put in the forecast long-term that we expect these funds, because, I think as Mike Ziegler has mentioned a couple times, we're really getting paid back the premiums that we might have overpaid over the years. So hopefully I'm not quoting you incorrectly, Michael.
I know.
So good stuff. On the expenditure side, I wanted to draw your attention to the personnel services. I did have an earlier typo in our discussion, but in further analysis, I think, in working with Mark Dozen too, and just kind of realizing that we might have forecast in May about a 2.5% increase in last October was around 3.2, but as the year progressed, we found that we needed to downshift that overall proposal. Well, if you look at the peer numbers and you go, okay, what was fiscal year last year of $29,498,000, and this year we ended up at $29,709,000, that's about a 0.71% or actually 0.17%. I even have a typo there too, so I apologize. But it's actually a 0.17% increase. Honestly, I mean, if I were just to cut to the chase, the reason for that, it was actually closer to 2.2% increase actual. And the reason for that is what that number for fiscal year 17's number, which was $29,498,000 and some change, which is what the fiscal year 18 number is based off of, I did not take into account a non-recurring expense, which was an educational stipend, which really only happened one time. So as we do with revenue, we do the same thing with expenses. If it's non-recurring, it really should be noted, even though it was actual. So the actual increase in expenses, or for basically for personnel services or payroll, was about 2.2% at fiscal year end 18. So again, sorry for a long, long drawn out. So sorry, Mark. I know that's not, you know, I'm trying to fix that for myself. I'll talk a little too much, but I think the ultimate thing here, folks, is I want to bring it to your attention, is that the total expenses versus forecast were about 2.2% increase over fiscal year 17 for all of fiscal year 18. So going into, you might have heard, actually, we've been discussing the last couple months, in the October fiscal year 19, the next forecast update, we'll be talking extensively because we just went through one of the, you know, very first Schedule A to B transitions following the recent collective bargaining agreement that was signed here in the last year or two. And so we'll be talking more extensively about the results of the fiscal year 19 salaries, which again, I'll stop there and leave that for the next couple of discussions at our board meetings. The if I were to continue on with purchase services and supplies, again, I'm actually pretty thrilled. I think my predecessor used to always say it's sometimes not a matter of being smart, it's sometimes being somewhat fortunate when the number actually turns out to be a very small $13,000 variance on a fairly sizable expense category. So I really won't take any credit for that, except to say that the numbers were, the averages happened to turn out in our favor. And then the thing I'll be showing up too is supplies and materials. That would have a bigger jump, probably 6% here in the last year. But overall, I'm pretty pleased with a $600,000 positive variance, really driven by personnel services, as we, if we were to look at the bottom line. So again, sorry for the long dissertation, but are there any questions about this month's financial report?
Thank you.
Great, thank you.
Roll call.
Mr. Dozen?
Yes.
Mrs. Kramer?
Yes.
Mr. Peterson?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes. Item 12, Treasurer's Announcement. A, Stifel Nicholas G17 Disclosure Statement, tab 24. Sounds very secret agent, G17. There we go.
G17. Can't make that one up.
Okay. May I have a motion?
Is it just a discussion, I believe? So you were just going to give an announcement.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry,
oh, it was more or less just a disclosure of the fact that Stifel Nicholas is the underwriter for this. But I don't know if there was any more, except that the board wanted to see. I wanted to at least show the bullet points and the where are the attributes that Stifel Nicholas brings to the table, as opposed to, it was good to compare Sazina and Associates and Stifel, the folks that are really working hard for us on our the selling of our bonds, which actually is a good thing. If I may mention a brief little timeline between now and our next board meeting, we did have a very solid trip to Chicago to talk about bond rating with our friends at Moody's. We should have that bond rating back within the week. And then the timeline for selling our bonds, we should get some pricing. I heard today from Michael Priscilla. We should receive pricing by the 28th and be able to go out and sell and finish the sale of all of our bonds, about all $44.5 million, by September 11th approximately. So we're keeping on that timeline, and so I don't see any reason why that shouldn't happen. Don't have any word yet about what our bond rating will be, but AA2 is excellent, and we're looking forward to moving forward.
And we should hear that in about a week, right?
Yes.
Sometime during next week.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, they said about 10 days, so, yeah. You know, 10 business days, which, you know, is generally our 2 weeks, but.
Okay. Item 13, superintendent's contract, which is Exhibit A. May I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Discussion, so I will speak for the board. Joelle, you have, Mrs. Magyar, sorry. You have been here for 2 years now, and then you have one more year left on that current contract, is that correct?
Yes.
And so the board would like to offer you a 3-year contract with an addendum to that final year of your current contract. Okay, and that's what the contract is, and that'll be Exhibit A, which is public. Can I have roll call?
Mr. Dozen?
I wasn't aligned with the terms, no.
Mrs. Kramer?
Yes.
Mr. Peterson?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes. Item passes 4-1. Okay, item 14, adjournment. May I have a motion?
So moved. You can have this one.
Second.
Roll call?
Mr. Dozen?
Yes.
Mrs. Kramer?
Yes.
Mr. Peterson?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes. Okay. We will now be adjourned, and this will be our last paper meeting. Mm-hmm. We will be having board docs and computers, and things will be searchable, and you can see everything. I know, right? It's such a big day. This board's been into the 21st century. It'll be